and welcome to another episode of Transcontinental Overload. I'm Stephanie, your host, still locked down in Austin, Texas. Hanging in there. How are y'all doing? How's y'all's sanity? Yes, I'm using y'all to my heart's content because I can. I live in Texas and it looks like I'll be spending a lot of time in Texas this year because I can't get on a plane. So yes, I'm using y'all because I love it. I think it's my favorite expression, word, contraction, whatever you want to call it, in the American language. And yeah, so I am just brazenly appropriating it and using it as much as I can. If you hear funny noises in today's episode, that will be my dog and my cat, who are usually in disagreement on how to spend their time in my office. The dog wants to sleep and the cat wants to play, and they don't communicate very well. Coming back to spending the summer in Texas, yeah, so I'm slowly getting to grips with the fact that we won't be spending our summer in Europe this year. I'm not ready to grieve that just yet, but I'm starting to feel that it's going to be really strange for myself and my family. For the last 10 years, since we left the UK to live in the US, our European summer has been one of the highlights of the year, and for me personally, probably the biggest highlight of the year, I'm not going to lie. And especially since living in Texas, escaping to Europe for the summer has been absolute bliss because it's just so damn hot here over the summer months that you just can't be outside during the day. But more importantly, and also more tragically, we won't be seeing our friends and family in person this summer, and who knows when we'll be able to do that again. I know we'll appreciate it even more when that finally happens, but we don't know when, and it's really hard to live with that uncertainty. I've said in previous episodes that I'm totally used to communicating with my friends and family back home via FaceTime and other social media only, so I'm used to that. That's not changed. But I always had that thought at the back of my mind that I would be seeing them in person eventually. Once a year, maybe only briefly, but that was at the back of my mind. Just knowing that I would has got me through a lot of hard times. That sense of I'm not feeling too good today, but I know I will be seeing so-and-so in July, and that helped so much. And now that possibility has been taken away from me, and I'm really angry about it. For my kids, spending the summer in Europe has been a constant. Kind of going back to the roots and feeding that connection with friends and family back home in an otherwise pretty temporary, rootless existence. So to not have that this summer is a real shock. And I mean, I don't know, if next time I'm going to hug my niece, she might be a teenager. She might not want me to hug her. I hate it. So all I can do at the moment is try not to think about it too much. I'm actually talking about this, going back to the roots and maintaining that connection with your home country in today's episode. I'm talking to Claire Hoxwell, an American expat in Switzerland. We recorded our conversation about 6 weeks ago, still completely unaware of what was to come in the following weeks. Claire and I had a really good conversation and found that we had so much in common, so many life parallels, but also common observations and thoughts. And so I am talking a lot too during this conversation. And I don't normally do that, or I try not to do that, or if I do, I try and edit myself out a bit. Because A, I want to hear my guest's story, and B, I don't want to be overbearing. But sometimes when a conversation just flows naturally, and you're having fun, you just let go, and that has to be okay sometimes. So I decided not to edit myself as much as I normally would. And also, it's kind of part of my current self-care routine. I am trying to be as kind as possible to myself and not too critical. So yeah. As I said, Claire is an American who currently lives in Zug, Switzerland. She is the author of a blog called My Theory on Blooming, where she ponders the trials and tribulations of living abroad. She calls herself a serial expat, and she has spent the last 11 years living on 3 different continents. Let's make sure I get this right. In 4 different countries and in 5 different cities. Claire says, expat life is not for sissies. I agree. Let's welcome Claire and hear her stories. Hi, Claire. Thank you so much for sitting down with me today.
Excited to be here.
So I just found, just looking at your blog and everything, that we have a lot of things in common. We both have 2 daughters, although I think yours are a little younger than mine. Mine are teenagers.
I have a teenager like in T-minus 12 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a 10-year-old mm-hmm. and a 12 and like, yeah, mm-hmm. 13-year-old. And it's, oh my gosh, it's so hard. I can't even think about what the next 4 years of my life mm-hmm. is going to be like. 5 years until she turns 18 and she has to go either get a job or mm-hmm. move out of my house.
Yeah, please don't ask me any questions, because then we'll start ranting and going off on a tangent.
I actually don't want to know. If I just go into it blind, it'll
That's a good approach. Absolutely. And then the other thing we have in common is we both love dogs. And I mean, my dog is definitely my therapy dog and my companion and my rock in all this. So, and I only have 1, but you have 2.
I have 2. We have Paco mm-hmm. and we have Chica, and they're like the best dogs. And they are my emotional support system when my husband travels, because he travels a lot. So it's, in Africa, it was like awesome to have them, because they just look mean and mm-hmm. you,
nice.
From a safety standpoint, and Paco's bark is like shrill and terrible. Yeah. But it doesn't work well in Switzerland, because within the first 3 days of living in our house and the dogs arrived, we had 3 neighbors come and say, your dog barks. Just let you know your dog barks. And then I went and cried in my room and mm-hmm. told my husband that I was leaving this country and you mm-hmm. can't make me stay.
So you are in Zug, which is...
We're in Zug.
Yeah. Right in the middle of Switzerland, really.
Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. We're basically like 40 minutes south mm-hmm. of Zurich. So we've been here for 7 months, mm-hmm. almost 7 months. And we transitioned from Johannesburg, South Africa, to Zug, Switzerland. It couldn't be a more polar opposite.
I can absolutely see that. So you, just like myself, went abroad as a trailing spouse. That is the official term, isn't it? I know. Isn't it horrible?
I love it so much. I love it. That's a great word.
So for those listeners who haven't heard the term trailing spouse, this is the person who follows their spouse on an assignment. And in most cases, still, it's actually the wife or the woman, the female partner, who accompanies her husband on an assignment rather than the other way around. So if you hear the term trailing spouse, it's usually women. Nothing positive about this term.
I wrote a blog post, maybe 3 years ago or so. It's called I'm Not a Trailer. And it's like all about, like, I'm this really awesome person. And
in many ways, also it's, I think the person who might not have gone for the job is actually the one who's trailblazing, because you're the one who has to manage the whole outside of work life.
I think I work like 24/7.
Well,
I have like 17 jobs. I don't
exactly, like, but that's the term. And
I'm coining a new term, and it's going to take a little time to get out there. And I haven't, it's coming. You'll see it soon. Well, you'll see it in the next year, but I'm coining a new term, and it's going to be eye-opening for mm-hmm. all of us trailing spouses.
I look forward to that.
Yeah, that's a little teaser for you when I get my act together here.
So Claire, you have lived outside of the US for the last 11 years.
Yeah.
And I said in my intro that you've been on 3 continents, in 4 countries, and in 5 different cities. And that, I mean, that to me, that's a lot to pack into 11 years. So tell me, how did it start?
It's kind of funny. It started even further back than that. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to originally move to Prague. So that would have been about 13 years ago, because our oldest daughter had just been born, and we'd always kind of like contemplated, like, wouldn't it be cool to like live overseas? And mm-hmm. I don't know where the idea even came into our heads, but we did. And then one day he came home and said, I have this opportunity. They want to move me to Prague. And I said, okay. I quit my job. I found a house over there. We started the visa process, like the whole 9 yards. And then about 3 weeks before we were ready to move, they said, just kidding, you're not moving to Prague.
Oh, and no.
So that was the original introduction to expat life for us.
Okay.
And so we lived in this like, you're going to move, you're not going to move, mm-hmm. you're going to move thing. And I had quit my job. And so I became a stay-at-home mom mm-hmm. unexpectedly. And anyway, I got pregnant with my daughter, and I can remember like walking around a baby store, and my husband goes, so would you rather it be Geneva or Amsterdam? And I was like, dude, I don't even care at this point.
At this point.
It's not even going to happen. Like, that's where I was at. Yeah. I was like, this isn't happening. Yeah. It's happening. We're moving to Geneva. And when I was 7 months pregnant, I moved to Geneva, which was literally the stupidest thing I've ever done in my entire life.
You just don't know, because this whole expat thing is just, there is no way you can know what it's going to be like. If you think, I can handle things, and...
Oh, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. I'm a very, like, mm-hmm. I can do this, yep. dependent, mm-hmm. like, I don't wait for my husband. I can manage this mm-hmm. on my own. And then we did it. And I was like, oh my God, this is really hard. And so we kind of ended up, we were only in Geneva for a short time. And then my husband went to a new company, and we ended up in Brussels, and we were there for 3 years, and then moved to Mexico City, and we were there for over 3 years.
So wait, I mean, that's like, I mean, Geneva to Brussels, I guess, probably not as much as a transition than to Mexico City.
At least it was the same language, sort of. I'm a terrible linguist. I'm not good at it. I took Spanish in high school, so I was lucky enough to have like that burned into mm-hmm. my brain from like 20 years ago. But learning French, learning Flemish was just, it was terrible for me. And now I'm learning German, which is even worse.
Yes, I totally sympathize.
So yeah, I mean, we've moved around, moving from one place in Europe to mm-hmm. another is pretty easy. Like mm-hmm. that, yeah. I felt transitioning into Brussels was really...
And also, I mentioned Brussels is pretty cosmopolitan in terms of because of its role in the EU
NATO, lots of foreign companies. And my daughter was at the point in life where she went to school. It's amazing what a school community can do for one when you need an outlet. Yeah. So that was a really good mm-hmm. transition for us. Mexico City. You know, it's just like 22 million people. It's like a small city.
and a high intensity city. We went almost 2 years ago now for a long weekend. And I mean, it's amazing, but I can't even imagine living there.
Yeah. So Brussels to Mexico City was a bit of a shock to the mm-hmm. system. It was nice though, because we went from a place where my husband traveled like 85% of the time. Mm-hmm. to him traveling like 15% of the time. So that was a really good family shift for us. It took me 6 months to get used to him being home all the time. I was like, don't you have a business trip to go on? Like, no. So that was a really good part of it. But this is very first world problem, but it's going to sound terrible, but we moved to Mexico City, and I went from being this like really hands-on person to having somebody in my house 40 hours a week that was cooking and cleaning and taking care of my kids And then I had a driver that drove me everywhere. And I was just like, what am I going to do here? Like, I mean, I went from being a stay-at-home mom to being like,
The mistress of the house.
Like I don't even know what I would have called myself. And I remember like trying to clean something and like being like having the broom whisk it away from me. I mean, that's, you get into that routine of like, I'm going to go to the gym and then I'm going to go have lunch with my friends. And that was not who I really was. It's that gin and tonic expat wife that everybody kind of has in their head. Right. So, and it, instead it was margaritas for me, but it, you know, like that's what you kind of found yourself doing a bit. And for me, I ended up becoming the president of an expat group, which was a really good outlet for me to like actually have. So that was a big change. And when we moved from Brussels to Mexico City, everybody was like, you're moving to Mexico City. It's so dangerous. It's like, you can't believe you're going there. And I was like, really not that bad. It was common sense stuff. So when we moved to Johannesburg, everybody was oh my gosh, you're moving to Johannesburg. And I was like, well, we live in Mexico City. And, you know, we learned a lot and it was very similar. So yeah, then we transitioned to Johannesburg. And
so how long were you in Mexico City?
About 3.5 years. And then we were in Johannesburg about 3 years.
Okay.
So we've been about three and a half years in every location.
I imagine that's quite tough because it's almost like that's the point where you feel at home somewhere. I always feel like it takes a good year to just recover from moving and just getting your head around all the what's going on and how things are done. And then you spend a year enjoying it and sort of, you know, looking at it as a, like almost a tourist where you kind of do all the fun things and you have all your friends and family come visit. And then year three is like, that's reality now. And then to have to move again from culture to culture too.
Yeah. I mean, it was a huge culture shift, but it was really similar to living in Mexico City. To a certain extent. So a lot of it was, there was a lot of in your face shocking things that you hadn't probably experienced before. But at the same time, like my husband and I have, and my kids too, we fell in love with Africa. We really did. I think, at least for our family, it was just a really good lifestyle. I mean, it was very relaxed. Having the patio doors open and having, you know, people all over and cooking and, you know, having this braai or barbecue, whatever you want to call it, out. That part of it was great for us because you could be this very relaxed and open kind of person, where we've been in cultures like Switzerland and Brussels where that's not quite the norm, especially with the local crowd. So we had South African friends. We could connect with them. I mean, it helps that you speak the language, the same language, but also, I mean, the nature, and the people are really, the people are really incredible. You just get to talking to them and they're so open and they talk about their lives and a lot of them had really hard lives and that they have such great stories and they have such great pride. And I don't know. I think there's just, there's just really something special about it. And we miss it. It was hard for the kids because it's their first time that they really remember.
Yeah. I was going to say that must've been an age where it made a real impact.
Yeah.
But it also sounds like that was one that suited the whole family. And I think that's with serial expats is a big deal sometimes when you move and then, you know, one member of the family is super happy and the rest of the family not so much. And then you have this conflict of where's home and what do we call home and where do you want to go back to?
I know. My daughters are always asking, when are we going back home? And they do call it home. And that's, I'm glad that they consider that part of their home, but they, you know, so, but they also know that Switzerland is their new home and they're learning about that and they're embracing things that I never would have let them do being in Africa or Mexico. There's some great stuff about living here.
It's so interesting, isn't it, what the children's view is on this and how they feel, what they consider home. So, I mean, your children have never lived in the US, have they?
One left when she had just turned two, I think. Yeah.
So that kind of how American are they, do you think? Or are they at all? Because I mean your husband is American too?
My husband is American as well. They're like super American. Okay. They're kind of like they're funny. But they hear, you know, David and I both have the same accents from home because we're from the same state. We're from Michigan originally. Okay. And so our kids will both say pop, you know, they say certain things, but then I'll hear them say things like, where's my jumper? And I'm like, you know, like, so they do pull words in.
Yeah.
Or they'll have inflection in their voice when they say a question that's not a question. So they're saying a statement, but it ends in a question, like a South African person would talk. But yeah, they're pretty American.
Do they go back to America like in a summer to see grandparents? Yeah. And
yeah, so we actually still own a house back in the States. Well, my mother-in-law decided to downsize about 6 years ago, I think, and we were living in the basement of my parents' house for the summer. And every time, you know, I'm in my parents' basement, my dad's office is in the basement, like you know, it's like the storage room, and I'm like in this little cubby area, and I was just like, I've had enough. Like, I told my husband, I said, I can't, next summer we have to like rent a house or do something because I can't do this anymore. And so we started talking about buying a house.
Yeah,
we ended up buying his mom's house, which was a house that my kids have always gone to. And
so that's kind of nice to have. It's some form of roots in a very expat way.
Yes, they have roots, so they know that home is in, you know, like we go home to Michigan and that's our house. And they're happy with that. So it is special to them. And I think that that is not what a lot of expat kids have, that sense of attachment to a certain place.
We've done the same thing, and my kids are 13 and 17 now, and we have spent, I mean, the last 10 years since we moved to the States, we've spent every summer over there, splitting our time between the UK and Germany. And so for them, they have that attachment because it just comes with the same house and the people too. And so they, I think it's kind of it's a home from home for them.
Yeah. And I think that's good for their hearts.
I think so too. But it comes at a price too, because I mean, we don't have that much time going to other places or exploring or traveling to other places. And my husband's on an American contract, so he doesn't have that much time off. And it's really difficult to then say, okay, we'll spend our summer there again. And so, you know, there's pros and cons, but you have to do what your kids feel they want to do, I think. And I've always thought that we'll just do that for as long as they want to.
Absolutely. I would agree with you.
I wouldn't want to drag them, but whenever I've said, maybe we're not going this summer, and they'd be like, what? No, we have to. So
I mean, we usually go home for about 6 or 8 weeks. But I have to say, when it's time to go home, back to wherever our expat home is, I'm typically ready, but I have a very heavy heart. It's a very conflicted time.
I know exactly what you mean by that.
I kind of need to get the heck out of here, and I need to get my life back in order, and I have to get to the gym, and I've got, you know, like I want to see my dogs and all this stuff. But at the same time, you're like, I don't want to leave. Like, I really love it here, or my friends here, or the beach, or whatever it is that you don't want to leave.
And it's exactly that feeling, the heavy heart, and to say goodbye again. And it's like that kind of thing does not get any easier, I don't think.
It really doesn't. I think it depends on where you're going to as well, you know.
Absolutely. And then also there's that, I've experienced the moving fatigue. sometimes it's just, you just feel like I'm just so exhausted by it. And I don't have that same drive every single time.
Oh yeah. Oh, totally. Like our last move was a kind of a little bit of a disaster. We didn't know we were moving till May. We went home for 8 weeks and we decided to go back to Africa to move. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was like, my head was exploding within the 2 week time frame that we decided that we were going to use to move from Africa to Switzerland. And by the time I got to Switzerland, I was like, I don't know how I got here.
Because your head is, you are just, there's one big schedule in your head and the logistics of the whole thing, no one realizes how many small, tiny factors are involved in this thing. And then because all your emotions are in complete upheaval at the same time, but you don't have time to deal with them. So they are waiting there for you.
Yeah. I can remember the last night before we were leaving and I was having a glass of wine with friends and I was just like, how did we get here? And she's like, I don't know how you got here, but you're here. It's done. The container's on its way. Just take a deep breath because you're leaving on an airplane tomorrow morning and it's starting again.
And
you don't have time to give. You don't have, there's no vacation.
No. And also because that's the other thing, as I think, especially as the trailing spouse, I just hate using that expression, but I'm using it now. You are the one shouldering the whole family's transition. You have to get the kids in school and do everything else. So I kind of feel there's just such a huge load that we take on our kids' sadness and our kids' reluctance or excitement. It's all going on. It's like you have more than one person's emotions inside of you during moving, and that's just
absolutely.
I think it's just like being tumbled in a tumble dryer.
Yeah, well, you're the magic maker. I mean, you for everybody. Like the dogs aren't going to get there unless you plan it, and this isn't going to get there unless you do it. And you need horseback riding lessons, and you need this, and you need that, and you're just like, okay, I got this. You are going to work. You know, like that's. It's on you. And I think that that's one thing that I wish that a lot of getting into it, new expats could understand is that it is a hard job that what we as a trailing spouse does. All I do is go to the grocery store or take people to doctors. It's like I live the same life that anybody else in the other world lives.
Yep.
I just live it in a different country with a different language that I don't understand. And sometimes it's on the other side of the road driving and, you know, like that's it. And that's hard. So it's, your brain is working constant overtime. And it's not, it's like if your capacity is 100, you're working at 150 the entire time. Mm-hmm. And that's why so many, I think a lot of times you hear about people saying, expat spouses saying, I'm so tired all the time. And it's because you're not just on cruise control doing what you would normally do. You know, Trader Joe's doesn't have your favorite, you know, whatever. You'll go to the other one down the street. You know, like here, you don't have any of that. Like you don't go on cruise control because you can't.
All right, Claire, before we talk about life, for your new life in Switzerland and your blog, let's play a little game. Let's have a quick fire question round.
Absolutely.
Question number one, what do you miss the most from your home country or the other countries that you've lived in?
I have a lot of home countries now. I consider a lot of places home. Mm-hmm. Something I miss about America, my true home country, is convenience. I miss Amazon and I miss 24-hour stores and I miss huge variety and, you know, drive-through ATMs and drive-through pharmacies. But I also have to say I miss a couple of things from other places. Mexico. I really miss the food.
Yeah, Mexican food,
especially tacos al pastor and chicharrón de queso from El Farolito, the taqueria. And I really miss the Mexican culture. I miss things like Dia de los Muertos. I miss posadas. So things like that. The Mexican culture just is incredibly rich and colorful.
Yeah.
And then I really miss the smiles of South Africa. Everywhere you go, people were smiling, no matter if they were well off or if they weren't. I just always saw smiles on people's faces. Mm-hmm. And I really miss things like walking into Woolworths, which is a grocery store, and hearing the staff sing and clap and have this energy that was so inviting and welcoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Question number two. What do you love the most about your new country?
So I'm living in Switzerland now, and I have to say that I am loving the public transport system here. It's super easy. It's super convenient. Mm-hmm. My kids can use it with ease without me. And it's really, really safe here.
Yep.
So it's such a stark contrast to places like Mexico and Africa. So yeah, we love being able to just go outside of our house and go walk around, and my kids can go out on their own and they can explore, and they have this mm-hmm. this real independence that they never had before.
Okay, and question number three. What did you think was true about your new country, but now you know is not? What surprised you the most?
The Swiss are known to be a little bit grumpy, and I have made it my own personal mission to smile at people. So when I'm out walking the dog or if I'm crossing the street, I usually put on a big, giant American grin, and they probably think I'm totally nuts, but they usually smile back at me. Which at first I was a little bit surprised, but I definitely have started to see that they're maybe not as grumpy. They're just maybe misunderstood. So that's my hope, at least.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the Swiss. Let's talk about what it's like to be thrown into Swiss culture as an American. When I read your latest blog post on the little things and how you were saying how you were missing people laughing in public, it broke my heart. And I can so see that. Germans are pretty similar to the Swiss, and it's this whole being on a train and having a conversation and laughing out loud and the looks you get. And and people have these preconceptions about, especially Americans, but being so loud. And oh my God, I couldn't live without that now, to just be able to be yourself. And so we're down here in Texas, and people are very warm and hospitality and all that. It's just, it's part of the culture so much. And I had to get used to that, and people being friendly. I really had to get used to it. And that you cannot stand next to someone in a line somewhere without them starting to talk to you and
smiling.
So that for me, it was like the opposite. I had to get used to that, and I had to learn to smile at people. And now I'm so used to it that I really notice it when I go back in the summer.
It is hard. Those are the small cultural things that literally. I am a very, if I'm around my friends, I'm an introvert to some extent, but in front of my friends or mm-hmm. people that I'm very comfortable with or, you know, one-on-one, I'm okay. But, you know, in crowds, it's hard for me. But when I'm sitting there and someone even says something to me and I'm like, I feel like an idiot. I'm trying to hide myself. It's really difficult when you just can't, you know, have a conversation with this person that actually is saying something to you, and you're like, oh wait, I would love to talk to you, but I don't have the words to say to you.
And that's, I feel sometimes that's there's a lack of appreciation of that, not being able to really express what you want to say in a language. And you kind of, you feel like you, cause you can't show who you really are.
Yeah.
Because of the language, it can be so frustrating.
It is. It is frustrating, but at the same time, I appreciate that's their culture. I was talking with my German teacher who's Austrian. Mm-hmm. So she was telling me, I said, you know, I just wish that I could, I don't know what the woman is saying. And I just wish that I could say, you know, have a nice day or whatever. I mean, I can say have a nice day, but, you know, like, how are you today? And she would probably be like, well, what the heck do you care how I am today? Because that would be how they would look at me. Like, why do you care how I am? But
yeah, they don't do small talk.
They don't do small talk. But she said, you know, you would probably be surprised. They would probably really find that genuine, like, this person doesn't understand that's not a thing for us. And so they're just being themselves. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, but we'll never get there because I can't like do it. And now I go into the grocery store and they see me and they're like, oh, it's the American woman that doesn't know how to speak Swiss German, which is fine. And I just smile and nod and don't know what they're saying and go on my merry way. But yeah, those little things are what I wish that.
So how are your children doing? They probably speak a few languages.
They speak Spanish and they speak English.
Are they an international? Do you send them?
They're at an international school. So they're learning German right now, mm-hmm. and keeping with Spanish. So that's a good thing. But the older, you know, it's funny because the older one is probably got German like every day, I think. They'll say like, you're saying it wrong, mom. Or I just can't do the throatiness.
Oh,
I got ripped on earlier for saying the name of the horse store wrong. And I'm like, you know what? I don't care.
But that's almost like the German double whammy to be confronted with that. I mean, I feel for you. I guess that's like moving, if you move to the UK, you move to Scotland. And that, I mean, you just couldn't possibly.
Still don't know what there's. I'm like, what? No, can you repeat yourself? So but they're doing really well. I mean, to be quite honest, we live in the Canton of Zug and it's so international. I think mm-hmm. that there's, I want to say like 30% of the canton is international. It's non-Swiss citizens. So
and at least you have people who are used to different languages and switching from one to the other and being absolutely surrounded by them. So I think that's probably a really nice thing to have.
Absolutely. Like, you know, they never worry about going up to the counter to say, can I have whatever in English, you know, mm-hmm. it's not just doctors and, you know, professionals that speak English. It's, you know, the girl behind the counter at IKEA who speaks four languages because all of a sudden I'm like trying to order, you know, a water and I say agua con gas and she's like, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, like I get my languages screwed up and she looks at me and she's like, I gotcha. I speak Spanish too. And I'm just like, oh my God, I can't even get one right. And like, you know, she's got this sign on her that's got like English, Spanish, German,
and
Dutch, all these. And I'm
just to make you even more, feel more inadequate. But it's funny. My husband used to say that when we first, started dating and he was learning German and he said his brain was kept kind of, he would think something and then it came out in French because he had some French at school and he said his brain I think was just thinking speak foreign and then that's what was coming out and he kept kind of getting that mixed up and his French isn't great at all and he's like I don't know where that French came from because it's not really what I you know, I was ever good at.
It was burned in there many years ago.
But it was like the brain was just like, speak foreign. I think, I mean, our poor brains dealing with moving and then throwing in another language too. I mean.
I wonder what like useless knowledge is in there of like so much different stuff, because it's like, I can't remember yesterday, but I can remember, you know, the guy's name that was the packer up for our move, you know, mm-hmm. months and months ago. So yes, I think that the expat brain's probably a bit fried in a
few. Yeah, but maybe fried, but also maybe used to being thrown into weird situations and dealing with embarrassment or just stupid stuff.
You have to be able to laugh at yourself. I'm at that point where I'm like, whatever.
Do you have an incident or a story that you can think of?
The worst one, let me see. Hasn't really happened too much here recently. I think the first time, so when we lived in Geneva, the first 11 years ago, Addie was a baby and my mother-in-law came to visit, and we went to France, we went to Paris, and my sister-in-law was with us. And, you know, I have a 6-week-old in a baby Bjorn, and I'm, you know, looking at one of those metro signs, and I'm total, like, I've got sneakers on, jeans, baby Bjorn, baseball cap. Like, I am like American, like just a beacon of Americanism right there. And I'm like, I don't care. I am who I am. And so this old woman walks up and I'm looking, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I know, I need to go up the street and turn left. And I'm looking at the map. This older woman walks up to me and she's like, she says something to me in French. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't speak French. And she said, where are you trying to go? In English, can I help you? And I mm-hmm. said, oh, I'm good. What street are you trying to go to? And I told her Rue Rennais. And she looked at me and she was like, your accent is terrible. And I was like,
thank you.
I couldn't even get the words out. Like, I just stood there. And I was like, I didn't ask you for help. Like, I was so mad at her. And then I couldn't even, like, and then she's this older woman. And I'm like, it'd be nice. Because maybe, I don't know. So that was my embarrassing. I was like, I was mad, but I was embarrassed. Because it was like, I said 2 words in French. I mean, I couldn't do anything right for that. And I was just like, yeah, forget it, I'm out. I said, from that point on, I really didn't care about French anymore. Because I was like, well, I'm going to speak it terribly anyway, so what does it really matter? But yeah, so maybe that was like the reason why my linguistic.
That happens to so many people, and it's such a shame. And that's, I think in general, people just need to be more aware of how hard it is to learn a new language. We have a lot of empathy, I think, for people who have difficulties with, you know, making themselves understood, because we've been there, we've been the new person. But I think a lot of people just, it's just zero understanding for that.
Yeah, someone had told me many years ago that said, and they were not a native English speaker,
yeah,
but English was our common language, because I think she spoke Portuguese mm-hmm. or whatever it was. And she said to me, I never feel uncomfortable speaking to you because you speak slowly. And that's one thing that I have learned over 11 years, is that when you're speaking to a non-native English speaker, mm-hmm. you have to speak slowly, because sometimes your words are, they're just as if, I don't understand when someone speaks Spanish at me, like at rapid fire.
Yeah.
I can't do it. So I have been very cognizant of listening to what other people are saying and then toning down my, you know, speed of speaking, because that's helpful. I can remember someone saying to me, like, I never feel uncomfortable speaking to you, because yeah. I know that you realize that I'm really having to concentrate on what yeah. you're saying.
That's nice, especially when it's kind of expressions too, that people, I think sometimes when people think, oh, you speak the language really well, they just throw in all these phrases and expressions, and it's, that's
the slang is the worst,
really, because yeah, you know, that's not what you learn in school.
And that could be a piece of advice that I would give another person that's an expat,
like, yeah.
if you hear someone speaking English to you, like truly say thank you, probably, but at the same time, do your best to help them understand you. Yeah. Well, and to be quite honest, I need to be probably more, I need to persevere more with my language, but when it comes to learning a foreign one for myself, because I'm very much like, oh, I screwed up. I'll just stop talking now and just go back to English.
It's, yeah, I understand, but hang in there, Claire. I always like to end my episodes with a question on traditions, anything that you do when you feel like you're missing the other country that maybe in your case, it may be South Africa or it may be the States.
Specifically, probably not. You know, we have things that remind us, like when it comes to Christmas time, I have one of those, like, you know, Christmas candle things that you
and,
you know, the German, whatever.
Yes, I have one too.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have I have a lot of items that when I look at them, I can remember people or places. And those are kind of the traditional things that I look back. So for me, I look at my kudu horns and I...
Do you have them up on the wall? And
they're ornaments on like a cabinet. But I also have, you know, like I've got these lovely Mexican Talavera plates that are displayed, and it reminds me of being with my friends and shopping in the markets, and you know, it just takes me back to those really special times. So I mean, I do enjoy seeing people do certain things, but it's not necessarily always me. Like I will say braai. I can't say barbecue anymore. It's the weirdest thing. I can't do it. My husband doesn't do it. Like we say braai. Now, which is a very South African thing. But yeah, so there's, you know, there are little tiny things, but I think that those are the things that spark my memory to remember those.
That's nice. I like that a lot. It kind of reflects who you are, because you're made up of all those different places now. You're not
Yes, we are. And it you know, it comes out in a lot of different ways. It could be food, it can be, you know, just pictures or conversation or whatever it happens to be. It's been good for us so far. We've enjoyed our life. I always wonder if I'm totally screwing my children up, but I think that they're probably gonna.
Yeah, of course you are.
All right. Yeah. No matter what. No matter what, that is happening.
Yeah, it's already.
Am I doing it on a monumental level? Is the real question, I guess. But
I think that's just what we do as parents. We just. We do our best. We give them opportunities. And I like to think that eventually they'll be all right. Fingers crossed. Claire, it's been really good to talk. Like I said, I feel like we have a lot in common.
Yeah, we do for sure.
So if people want to read your blog, you are on mytheoryonblooming.com.
That is me.com. You can find me on Facebook at mytheoryonblooming. You can find me on Instagram on My Theory on Blooming.
We'll hear details of what's to come.
Yes, on it's those coming. Channels. I know we will. Yes, this is me. That's like my little teaser. Like it's actually gonna something's gonna actually have to happen.
I love it.
Actually, like, put something out there in the public eye. So I'm working on. I'm working on something for everybody.
It's been great. Thank you so much, Claire.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
So that's it from me for today. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Claire. Make sure you head on over to her website to check out her blog. I love how Claire's sense of humor comes across in her writing. So enjoy. And she has actually just published another blog post, and it's coronavirus related, of course. It's called At Least We All Have Plenty of Toilet Paper. So enjoy that and see you next time.